decided that Jake will speak for 25 minutes and have 5 minutes of question and answer, but he's open to talking with you further afterwards. This is how he had prepared. So I've got this on for the sake of the mic, for the recording. I'm not surprised that Jake Cave chose evangelism in a pluralistic society for his capstone. After all, he has encountered and possibly tested a variety of ways of making sense of life. Having lived in numerous locations, including North Carolina, Chicago, Paris, France, Germany, and many cities in Virginia. He enlisted in the Army at age 20. He served as a Patriot Missile Enhanced Operator, or maintainer, for 4 years while stationed primarily in Ansbach, Germany. Upon leaving the Army, James attended James Madison University, where he served as a Young Life leader. After graduating from JMU with a Master's of Art in Teaching, he taught math and science for 6 years. Jake has been married to his wife, Ashley, for 5 years. Ashley is a Spanish and English as a second language teacher. They have two adorable sons, McCully, who is 3, and McCray, who is almost 1. Jake and his wife, Ashley, helped to lead UKirk, a Presbyterian campus ministry at JMU, for 4 years. After graduation from seminary, Jake plans on being ordained in word and sacrament in the Presbyterian Church, USA. I have always enjoyed Jake's generous participation, his determination to learn, and his willingness to both push back and remain open to changing his mind in the courses that we shared. I anticipate that these traits will stand him in good stead as he seeks to communicate the gospel in a variety of settings and contexts throughout his life. Thank you, Jake, for working with me.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I would like to start out by thanking Mary and David and anybody else who supported me over the last 5 years. I really appreciate it. Mary and David were both very instrumental in working through this project. So. The bottom line and what I'm trying to get at today is that we all live in very diverse societies, and that is very clear and it's evident and is unavoidable. So the question I try to answer is why and how do we evangelize in environments like that? And there seems to be a spectrum of how people think that we should interact with different cultures and different faiths. On one end of the spectrum is individuals who think we should yell and scream and really divide amongst each other. And the other end of the spectrum is it doesn't matter what you believe, all religions are the same, so it's fine. And I've interacted with people on both ends of the spectrum as well as people in the middle. To work through this project, I primarily drew from Newbegin, Muck, and Crable, because I believe that they are forerunners in the field of mission in plural societies. And I think that they all believe primarily that it's all about relationships and getting to know other people. Also incorporated in this project is my development throughout my life and through formation classes and an overall study of theology. So the question I'm trying to answer is how do we conduct mission in a plural environment? Now, working at an all-male boarding school, I've heard some horror stories of chaplaincy. I've heard people who have, one chaplain told one young man that his mother is going to hell because she's a Catholic. I've heard of other chaplains who have held prayer meetings outside of Muslim students' dorm rooms and very loudly prayed for their salvation because that kid's going to hell. I've heard of other chaplains and teachers who have stood up and told a kid to their face, Christian to Christian, that they're going to hell because they don't believe the same dogmatic beliefs that that chaplain does. So evangelism, I think, really gets a very bad rap. I think primarily because it's been done so poorly in a lot of instances in a very insulting sort of a way. But evangelism comes from the Greek word euangelizo, which means to bring the good news. So the bottom line is that when we evangelize, we are bringing the good news, particularly the good news of Jesus Christ. And if it is indeed good news that has the power to change lives forever, why should it be used in a way that is insulting or degrading to others? Furthermore, how is it productive if we show something that is good news in a negative sort of a way? That just doesn't make sense to me. The good news should be that. It should be good news. It should be delivered in a way which demonstrates that it is indeed good news for all who hear it. Now, one primary issue that comes out of Christianity interacting with other faiths and other cultures, I believe firmly, comes from our individualistic mentality of Western culture. Because it comes out that if we seem like we have the truth, then it seems like we put ourselves in a superior role to others, saying, I have the truth, but you don't. This is offensive and caused people to say, well, your truth is yours and mine is mine, so let's just leave it alone and just not even talk about it. But we can debate other things. We can debate science. We can debate politics. But religion is off the table because that's a private matter. Trying to change beliefs or saying that we hold on to the truth is seen as arrogant and insulting. So instead of debating differences, since they are held as private and untouchable, this leads to picking and choosing what we want to believe, because I can internalize whatever the heck I want because you can't touch it because it's a personal opinion. So what this individualism does is leads to privatization of religion and the concept of religious pluralism. So in order to combat this idea, it's important to know the difference between cultural pluralism and religious pluralism. Living and working in a plural context versus holding religious pluralism ideas and viewpoints. So it's important to know the difference. Cultural pluralism is nothing more than embracing the fact that we are culturally different than one another and being able to essentially just getting along, especially in plural contexts where there's a wide range of cultural and religious standpoints and backgrounds. So cultural pluralism, again, is just in living and interacting in our plural context and really just getting along with other people. Religious pluralism, on the other hand, is saying that our differences are fine and we can pick and choose whatever we want to believe. And we should not argue or debate about our differences, but we should accept all different views. That the data that we have interpreting God is my data, so don't you dare touch my data. So religious pluralism, again, is essentially watering down our beliefs so that we can get along better with others and not be offensive, whereas cultural pluralism is just being able to embrace differences in different cultures. I believe firmly that the woman at the well very well demonstrates the need and the practice of evangelism across boundaries. Since we are in a seminary, I'm not going to get into details about the story, and also to save time. But Jesus crosses religious, cultural, and gender boundaries in order to initiate a conversation with a Samaritan woman who has a poor reputation. It is Jesus who goes into her home environment. It is Jesus who starts up the conversation and gets to know her and then relates the good news to her where she is in her current situation. At the end of the conversation, the woman re-enters her society and many more come to believe in Jesus. In the same way, I think that we are to cross religious, cultural, and even gender boundaries and go to those who are not like us and initiate conversation with them, get to know them, and then demonstrate the good news of Christ to them. Now, believing in the good news of Jesus Christ is a life-changing deal, and it should be seen as strongly as any other scientific view in the world. If I believe this to be true and if I stake my life on this, then I believe this just as much as I believe in gravity. So I think that we should welcome plurality but reject pluralism. There's goodness in plurality. We develop relationships and depth of life, and it makes life interesting and intriguing where we can all learn from one another. But pluralism is not a requirement for us to live in plural context. With the woman at the well, one of the questions that the woman asks is, well, you say that we're supposed to worship in Jerusalem, and we say that we're supposed to worship on this mountain. What are we supposed to do? And Jesus clearly says that you worship what you do not know, that one day we will worship God in spirit. So he does not say, hey, that's fine, you worship wherever you want, and I'll worship how I want, and we'll be cool. He sticks to the truth of the gospel. The gospel is life-changing, and the only way for her to have eternal life is through Jesus Christ. So the gospel is life-changing, thus it comes with some sort and some amount of offense and friction. But I think that we should hold on to this truth and not say that it's a private matter or that it is something that doesn't even matter, that we should not talk about differences and try to show others the truth of the gospel. I think that we should do those things, that this is indeed good news. We should also not be surprised if those that we interact with hold on to their beliefs as strong or stronger than we do. We should expect that to happen, and we should respect that to happen as well. I've had conversations with Muslim students who are forced to take my Bible class, which gets a lot of pushback from Muslim students. But at the end of the semester, last semester, one Muslim student in particular, we're having a conversation, and he says, so what do you say then if you believe in this so strongly, but we have this sort of a good relationship now? What do you say? I say, well, I still believe that God has demonstrated himself to all people. One of us is misinterpreting who that is, and I believe strongly that I'm not misinterpreting it. But we can still have a good, fruitful, open conversation about these things. I don't have to say, we're both right. I don't think that we have to do that. So, where I have been working for the last year is Hargrave Military Academy in Chatham, Virginia. It is an all-male boarding school for young men ages, seventh graders through postgraduates. It is Baptist affiliated. It's very culturally diverse. We have students from China, Rwanda, Togo, Vietnam, Serbia, El Salvador, Mexico, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and many other countries, as well as throughout the entire U.S. Religiously, I did pass out a survey to all the students at Hargrave. You get not very many responses from 12 to 19-year-olds, but I did the best that I could. 55 students identified as Christian, one as a Muslim, one as a Jewish student, 4 as atheists, and 7 as agnostics, and 5 as others. The 5 who were others, one of them was Baptist, which is apparently not a Christian. But again, they are 12 to 19-year-old students, so they just may not know the difference. One of them said a belief in an unknown God, so you're an agnostic, got it. Anyway. But I believe that this institution, that these demographics is simply a snapshot of the world that we live in any context that we live and work in, I believe, looks somewhat similar to this. So if I live within pluralist context, and if Christians believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ is indeed good news for all people, then the concept of evangelizing in plural societies is a practice which all followers of Christ, I believe, should be interested in becoming more proficient in. And the bottom line is that this should be good news for all people. Regardless of how different we may seem, the gospel is for all people. From Abraham on, all people were selected as individuals to be the bearers of good news and to be blessings to all people. So through the conversation that Jesus had with the Samaritan woman, many more from her own hometown came to have faith in him. So the sharing of good news impacts people across national, race, and social boundaries. And through going across these boundaries, their own environments and their cultures are also impacted, as the Samaritan woman's town was. So the question I try to get to is, so how do we do this? I think that the first step that I think that EMS was very good at developing is to know our own core convictions. Unless we know where we've come from and how that's molded us into who we are, and how the gospel of Christ drives our daily lives, we can't start unless we know where we're coming from. So a shout out to formation classes, where we have to know our story and know how our story fits into the overall story, which is the story of God. So we're to know our own convictions and who we are and what we believe. And this is a starting point. We have to know where we're starting from in order to go. The hard part, and the part that I believe most strongly in right now, is that once we have our core convictions figured out, I think that we need to bracket those core convictions when we're having conversations with others. What we do is we find our core convictions, and the ones, whatever our core convictions are, stay in the forefront of our minds. So if having a conversation with somebody, I'm judging them out of my core convictions as opposed to listening to them. So I think that we need to find a way to bracket our core convictions so that we can listen to them with an open mind. Now, this does not mean that we disregard our own core convictions and we forget them. We temporarily set them aside so that we can listen to other people. If we would disregard our core convictions, they'd be the same thing as religious pluralism, which I have said that I reject. But we can't open to open conversations if we're constantly judging the other based on our beliefs. So we need to know our core convictions and be able to determine what of these to set aside in order to enter into conversations on a level playing field. Newbegin brought up this image, which is where if you have the Christian on one side and whoever you're talking to on the other, that both parties need to come down from their high horses and their pedestals in order to meet at the bottom where you can have a true, faithful, open conversation. Going back to the survey that I passed out, for those who identified as non-Christians, 77% said they responded more to a chaplain who is open in their faith, where 16% said they'd rather have a chaplain who is firm and unbending in their faith. Even those who identified as Christians, 62% said they'd stated that they'd rather have a Christian who's open in their views. So I believe that this demonstrates that individuals, both Christians and non-Christians, respond more to an evangelist who is open to conversations and seeing other people's points as possibly valid, not judging the other person based on our own convictions. And I think that if we could do this, it would inverse those horror stories that I started out with as far as condemning other people to hell based on our own core convictions. And along those lines, I really think that the main thing that we need to bracket when coming into conversations with people who are different than we are is who is in and who is out. If I'm judging somebody's salvation, how in the world can I have a conversation with them? Secondly, that is way above my pay grade. I am never a person who can determine if somebody's going to heaven or to hell anyway. And the Bible is abundantly clear that we're going to be surprised who goes to heaven and who goes to hell. In the story at the woman of the well, Jesus did not focus and dwell on the woman's poor decisions. He did not condemn her for what she's done. He did mention it, but he did not dwell on it, even though he is the only one who is within the pay grade to make that decision. So I believe that the primary thing that we need to bracket is who is in and who is out, who is going to heaven and who is going to hell, because I can't make that decision anyway, and if I come into a conversation with that view, I can't really have a conversation. So the next thing that we need to do, I think, once we have bracketed our convictions, is to be able to listen to people. When Paul went into Athens, he did not judge the people and disrespect them based on their beliefs, but he listened to them and he got to know them. In order to listen to people, I believe that we need to know their language. First is their actual spoken language. For my Muslim students, I love welcoming them with Assalamu alaikum or Marhaba or whatever else. My students from Togo, I try to speak French to them. Try is the main thing. Students from Rwanda, they speak French too, so I try to speak French to them, but they just laugh at me. But going back to my Muslim students who I care the most deeply about, being able to walk up to them and say, Assalamu alaikum, they say, alaikum salam, and just their faces just light up to have this white chaplain come up and talking to them in their own language. And even walking across campus, I'll hear a Muslim student all the way across whatever grounds we're on yelling, Assalamu alaikum, chaplain, alaikum salam. And they get so much joy out of that. And it's not just their spoken language, but it's also how they communicate. How do they relate to one another? What is their culture like? Understanding their context. I believe it was Muck who talked about having the newspaper in one hand and the Bible in the other. Like having students from Togo, knowing what their culture is like. How do they relate to other people? Having students from Saudi Arabia, what is that like for him? Having a student from Yemen, what is that like for that young man to be that far away from his family? He is not allowed to fly anywhere with risk of deportation. This is a 16-year-old kid who can't go home and see his family, who's living in a war-torn civil war. So what is that like for that young man? In order to do that, you spend time with them, and you get to know them where they are, and you build relationships with them. You would think that'd be common knowledge to build relationship to those you want to share good news with. But all too often, I think that we try to bring the message without knowing them or where they come from. Especially in plural societies where there are so many, many different types of people and influences. So getting to know each individual. Going back to the data again, 44% for non-Christians and 37% for Christians. The key factor for them was relationships. In a relationship, it is relationships that enable most young individuals to grow in their spirituality, regardless of if the evangelist is from the same faith background or not. When reading writing comments, one comment I believe summarized all the data very well. A student who identified himself as other said, I love the way the chaplain is religious, but doesn't sound like he's shoving it down your throat. He more gives you things to think about, like an open palm talk, which I stole from Seth Christman, by the way. I thought a lot about how keeping your palm open to information and advice from others. So the bottom line is it's about relationship. It's about receiving as well as gaining information. It is becoming a part of their lives and their culture. In plural contexts like Hargrave, seeing how they have their own individual cultures from wherever in the world they come from, but they also have an overarching culture of a student body of 200 all-male people living in the same place. Once we can relate to them and once we understand their cultural context, then, and I think only then, can we relate the good news of the gospel to them where they are. In interactions between Jesus and the Samaritan woman, Jesus got to know the woman first. Granted, he is Jesus, so he has a leg up on getting to know people. But he demonstrates that he does know her and her life and her culture, and then he relates the good news to her where she is. So if the evangelist can truly understand where the person stands and can truly understand their cultural and their religious views, then through connecting all these aspects together into the truth and the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, then I think that we can relate the good news of Jesus to where they are in their standpoints. If we can respect them and get to know them and know their situation and their culture, and we can relate Christ to them in their own experiences. It's a lot like in teaching, the best way, the best practice is in order to build on to already known information. You can't just throw things that are not connected to their lives. So you need to connect the information to their life. I believe it's the same way in evangelism. If we can relate the good news to their lives, then the good news and the Spirit of Christ, hopefully, will radically inbreak into their context and shatter their preconceived notions, both of Christianity and the way that they see God. It's making the good news relevant to them and their lives, where they can see God acting in their own lives. In plural context, granted, this is even more tricky because they're inundated with so many different views of what it means to have life. But looking at all these influences which seem disconnected and relating them all to the good news of Christ, how Christ is indeed working in each and every cultural and religious viewpoint that they have, but showing that it is indeed Christ. So I believe that we need to come into situations and bracket our core convictions so that we can listen, understand them, and then we can take our core convictions and put it into their lives so they can understand where we're coming from. And the bottom line is that relationships are a two-way conversation, not a one-way conversation. The church has never just opened its doors and then closed them once they get a new member. It opens its doors to all, and I believe that through interacting with other people, the church diversifies and it grows deeper. Even with Jesus and the Samaritan woman, she was the one with the bucket, and Jesus asked her for a drink. I think this demonstrates that both sides have something to offer to the other. It's imperative for those going out into plural societies to grasp that individuals, as well as the whole church, change through encounters with others. Plural societies are rich in cultural and religious perspectives, so the evangelist has a great opportunity to deepen and widen their own perspectives. So the church changes and it grows and it deepens through these interactions. And I believe that we gain a larger and deeper view of who God is through letting ourselves learn and allowing the Spirit to speak to us in these very diverse situations. Letting our own preconceived notions also be shattered because God is bigger than anything any of us will ever grasp. So since we all relate to diverse individuals within plural context, I believe it is in the best interest of all followers of Christ to become more proficient in practicing evangelism in their own context through getting to know ourselves and our core convictions, getting to know the other person and their culture on a deep and personal level, and then relating the gospel of Christ to them where they are and allowing ourselves and our views to be changed in the process. So I'd like to just urge all of us to look around to our pluralist context. Look for the plurality. Look for those of different cultures and religious backgrounds, living and interacting with individuals with different faiths and cultural perspectives than we do. I believe that this enriches and enhances our daily lives as well as our view of who God is. Plus, it makes my life just more fun and interesting. This is what living with richly diverse pluralist context brings. But this does not mean that we should inherently accept all the viewpoints and interpretations of all those whom we come in contact with. This can be very threatening and even scary, but in the end, these interactions not only bring depth to our faith and experiences, but we may indeed connect our view of the good news to their lives, where they will come to grasp the good news of life and life in abundance. They may, we hope and pray, come to see that the good news of Jesus Christ does indeed relate to their lives. And they may, in turn, experience the fullness of life that God promises. And they may share that with their own culture, and their own cultures may continue to change. So we should listen and get to know them, bracketing our own convictions so that we can listen to them and not judge. Try to find where their experiences God is demonstrating himself. Where is the inbreaking of the Spirit into this person's life, in their culture and their individual lives, and then, and only then, relate the good news of Christ to them. I believe that we can stand on our particularities and demonstrate the truth of the gospel in our ever-changing and growing plural context. We don't have to water down the gospel saying that your perspective is fine and I won't touch it. But we do have to communicate the good news as good news for all people.
Thank you.